The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perrow columnist for StockEd. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers Podcast. Now, we're off to West Africa today with Mako Gold. Code is MKG, trading at about 6.3 cents for a market cap of 24 million. We have the founder and managing director with us today, Peter Ledwich, to give us a rundown on what the company's up to in Côte d'Ivoire in West Africa. Big news recently with a maiden resource, so we've got lots to talk about. So with that, I'll say, g'day, Peter. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, and my pleasure to be here.
Peter, I've just mentioned there the in Côte d'Ivoire, the NAPI project. You've had a maiden resource estimate released on the 14th of June. So tell us a bit about that and the scale, the grade, and where you see it as a foundation for perhaps increasing the resource to even greater heights.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we recently put out that maiden resource, and I think it was hotly anticipated. And so it came out at 868,000 ounces at 1.2 grams per ton, which exceeded most people's expectations, including some of our large shareholders. I just came in Toronto. I just came back from PDAC over there, and they were all pleased with it. So it's just the first step in the growth of the project and the company.
You've put it together pretty quickly too. What time frame are we talking about to arrive at this point?
We listed in 2018, and then we had a little bit, it took a while. You know, we did our maiden drilling. It took a while to figure out where the hot spots were because it's a large permit. It's 30 kilometers long. And so once we honed in on the first the first prospect we honed in on was Chaga, and we, you know, drilled that and learned a lot from our drilling, changed our drilling direction and so on. And then after that, we focused on the Gogbala deposit, which added quite a few ounces and is actually has a pathway to the greatest short-term growth as well.
So when you look at that prospective shear zone, the deposits that you've outlined to date in the maiden resource, what sort of distance are we talking about between them?
Well, they're between Chag and Gogbala is about 4.5 kilometers. And when you consider that the area between the south end of Gogbala and the north end of Chaga, which includes that 4.5 kilometers of not drilled or very sparsely drilled area, that's only about 8 kilometers. Basically, it's about the resource is about 13% of that 30 kilometer shear that we have. So that's why, you know, we're quite convinced that we have a good growth pattern optionality on the project.
And what's the sort of depth is this resource estimate made to?
Well, it's very shallow. So on Gogbala, the maximum depth is 165 meters, but the average depth is about 150 meters. And on Chaga, the maximum depth is 195 meters, with the average depth being about 170 meters. So when you take into account that the recent resources that came out of West Africa in the last couple of years average about 300 meters. That shows that, you know, we've got good growth potential at depth as well as a long strike.
Has there been any deep holes to date?
We've done a few deep holes, particularly on Chaga, where we've gone down and definitely identified mineralization down to 200 meters, you know, in the order. I can't remember the exact. People would have to look at some of our previous releases, but we had one intersect that was about 19 meters at 5 grams, something like that. So we do know that it goes down to that depth. So, you know, the way to grow in that area at Chaga is that wasn't included in the resource because we didn't have enough drill holes there. So obviously, you know, get a few more drill holes and then you can connect the dots and add that on our next resource upgrade.
Am I right? So when I was looking at the map, I saw Tioto's 3.5 million ounce Abujar project, which they've built up very quickly. That's on the same belt, is that correct?
It is. It's along the same fault in the same belt. And we do compare ourselves to them. And if you look, three years ago, they only had 700,000 ounces and now they're building a mine. And I'd like to add that in West Africa, the whole Birimian greenstone, that is the only greenstone belt that does not have an operating mine on it. So it's obvious that Tieto is going to beat us to it, but we hope that we follow shortly behind.
So how far away would Tieto's?
It's about 200 kilometers south on the belt, 150 to 200 kilometers. But the same principles are at work there and very similar tectonic setting and mineralization process.
I take it you guys are all friendly over there when you bump into each other at the pub or at the airport?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, when I was last in Côte d'Ivoire in April, I went out with Tieto's MD and we had a nice supper together. So yes, we are all very friendly with each other and share information as much as we can. Obviously, there's confidential information but that we're not going to share, but it's in everybody's benefit to help each other out because what's good for one party is going to promote the other party.
Now, we are talking West Africa. People think of it as one region, but it's many, many countries. I was just wondering, what's the situation in Côte d'Ivoire at the moment? Any concerns or are things reasonably settled?
Yeah, and that's a very, you're not first one to ask the question. I've had pretty well every presentation I do, people ask the question because, people have been following, what's going on in countries like Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea. Where they've had military coups. And, having said that, there's been no bloodshed. So it's, that's good news. But we really don't think that those things are going to happen. I mean, for example, in Côte d'Ivoire, as an example, we used to have a project in Burkina Faso that we sold 2 years ago or a little bit less than 2 years ago. It kind of broke our heart to sell it because it was a good discovery, but there seems to be a jihadist insurgency there, which makes it unsafe for small juniors to operate in. The larger mining companies, they don't have any problem because they can afford good security by and large. But we don't think that's going to, that insurgency is going to happen in Côte d'Ivoire for two reasons. Is one, Côte d'Ivoire is, other than Ghana, which is next door to Côte d'Ivoire to the east, it's the wealthiest of all the West African countries. And so they can afford good military, good police force, et cetera. And the other reason is that geography doesn't lend itself to that, where the vegetation's thicker, there's a lot of agriculture. A lot of the jihadist terrorist hits that happen, for example, in Burkina Faso, happen where you can pretty well drive a Land Cruiser anywhere. Yeah. And so that's not, for those reasons, we feel quite secure in Côte d'Ivoire. As a matter of fact, when I go there, I walk around freely in the city where we operate from, and have absolutely no risk to my personally.
Oh, good to hear. Okay, now you're at the 868,000 ounce level. What do you see as the target to have? To perhaps start thinking about a development?
Well, our next milestone, before the resource came out, I was being conservative when I'd speak about the resource and I'd say, look, we're going to get a resource somewhere north of 500,000 ounces. And then we think that we can be at 1 million ounces by Christmas of this year. But the resource came in higher than any of us thought. So our next milestone really is 1.5 million ounces, and we believe that we can get that done within a year or less. And at that point in time, while we're doing all that work, we'll be doing some metallurgical work. We've already done some preliminary metallurgy, but obviously you want to do some more. And then once we have 1.5 million ounces on the ground, that's where we feel that, you know, we can move into a scoping study and then feasibility while we're still adding more ounces.
West African gold producers listed on the ASX have been amongst the strongest performers of any class of securities. I'm just wondering, when I look at your market cap and you've now got that maiden resource, you seem to have a very low enterprise value per ounce. Is there any particular reason for that, do you think?
I'm asking myself the same question. And where, you know, the average ounce, you know, per you know, valuation for EV sort of thing in West Africa is somewhere between $70 and $85. And we're sitting at, you know, 35 or less. So I, you know, I've seen it happen in other companies. Previously, I worked with Orbis Gold that, you know, was a very successful company. You look at West Africa Resources, which is a, one of the, I think it's the best producer on the ASX, best gold producer on the ASX, Tieto, you know, those companies, they were all horribly undervalued for so long. And then all of a sudden, the penny dropped and investors started realizing, hey, you know, this is like your next growth story. And so that's what we hope is going to happen in the not too distant future with Mako.
You mentioned you attended PDAC in Canada recently. They tend to be more switched on to the West African story than the Australian market. Is that still the case? Are they showing interest in the sector?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, just shortly, for example, one of the companies that we compare ourselves to is Roscan. That's TSX listed. And we know those guys fairly well. And they announced their resource, basically same grade as ours, 1.2 grams per ton. They had a few more ounces. They were at 1.2 million ounces. So they announced their resource just a few days before we did. And the market, they're sitting right now, they're sitting in about 25 cent range. And even though they came out, their resource, they're getting hammered by these horrible markets as well. So I think it's a bit of a bloodbath, both on the ASX and on the TSX right now. But, you know, I think the good investors will see that as an opportunity to do some bargain basement shopping, I would say.
As Warren Buffett might say, there's good news and all that because things are cheaper than they were. So. And particularly when you've got a building story like you guys have got, I was just wondering if you could fill us in on what's happening on the ground now in terms of drilling programs or planned drilling programs. What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, well, right now our guys and gals are doing geological mapping on not just on the Napier project, but also on our Tier 2 project, which is very early stage, the Kohogo project, because we've gone into the wet season over there, and if by all accounts it's a very wet season this year. We've been lucky the last 2 years where we managed to forge through, having only stopped drilling for about a month or a month and a half. And so right now the drills aren't turning. We're still expecting some more results from some drilling that we did on another prospect on Napier, and as well as a bit of drilling that we did on the Kohogo project. But basically our team is on the ground getting ready for the next phase of drilling. And the best way to do that is to go out there and, you know, boots on the ground, bang on some rocks, take some rock chip samples. And between that and all, you know, the other tools that we have at our disposal, then we can come up with some more good drill targets following the wet season.
When does the wet season generally come to an end?
Usually it ends in, you know, late September, early October, that kind of thing. But it's so hard to predict. I mean, right now it's raining really hard. Does that mean that, you know, within a few weeks it won't be? And one of the things that we're also very cognizant of is the locals have crops in the ground. So even though, you know, we compensate them when we drill and we have a very small footprint when we drill, we prefer to let them pick their crops. So, you know, that's one of the consideration, but they don't have crops everywhere on the project. So We're kind of opportunistic, so we go drill in areas where there's no crops, and but we really want to be on side with the community, which is obviously very important.
And that really is no different to the wheat fields of WA or the Victorian goldfields, where the industry's engages with the farmers, lets them crop and come back at a time that suits everyone. So it's all about good community relations, isn't it?
It is. And you know, I've always believed in that. And even before ESG became the word of the minute, and, you know, you're in somebody's backyard, you've got to be respectful, and there's got to be something in it for them. You got to help out the community in whichever way you can.
Now, you touched on the state of the markets at the moment, but that will pass at some stage. But key to success for a junior explorer at this stage, I would imagine, is having cash in the bank. So how are you guys positioned?
Well, we're actually doing quite well. So we expect to finish this quarter with anywhere from $3 to $4 million in the bank. And so that puts us in a good position to ride out these markets, especially when you consider, you know, the work we're doing right now, on the ground, geological mapping, rock chip sampling, you know, that's not expensive stuff. But it lets us ride out. Hopefully, you know, the markets will pick up a little bit, but regardless, we'll get back to work as soon as we can, and we're financed to do that.
Yeah, it's funny how the markets work, even in the darkest hours. If someone's onto a good discovery, or there's a promise of a good discovery, the funding is there, albeit at prices companies would rather not see, but it tends to be result driven. The funding capacity, capability. So, all right. Now, you mentioned Kahogo, a early stage project, but it is in the same neck of the woods, I believe, as Barrick's 5 million ounce Tongan.
That's right. So the permits got granted in late 2020 and then 21. So we got to work straight away on those as soon as they got granted. So we did the airborne geophysics, which includes mag and radiometrics, which helps us, identify structures that are obviously very important, as well as a little bit the geology. We did the 400 meter by 100 meter soil sampling. And then this year we followed that up with some auger drilling in select areas. And so the auger drilling picked up some, and we didn't do auger drilling over the entire permit, obviously, but the areas where we did do it, it picked up some large anomalies that are basically the same footprint as Barrick's 5 million ounce Tongan mine. So, it's very encouraging. So we started a drill program there, and it was a 2,000 meter drill program. And we actually cut off the drill program before about halfway through. And the main reason for that was we in our geological mapping back on the NAPI permit, we identified a 9 kilometer artisanal site. And so we wanted to go and drill that. And those are the results that we should be putting out in a not too distant future. So the Kahogo project is an early stage project, obviously. It's not as high priority as our NAPI project, but we're advancing it. And so we're also going to be doing some geological mapping there in preparation for some more drilling on that as well sometime after the wet season.
Just interested in the strategy of adding that as a second project. Are busy enough up at NAPI, or you're just taking the opportunity because the prospective ground there is much easier to pick up than, say, the back blocks of WA?
Well, you know, we see the pipeline of, as a company, it's nice, you have your flagship project, but you want to add some other projects into your pipeline for, future growth. And incidentally, I'm always looking at other projects as well, keeping in mind that you have to finance those as well. And so everybody's excited about Napier, and because it's, obviously the one that's likely going to be the company maker for us. But yeah, so We're focused on making sure that, you know, we advance the Kohogo project, but with limited funds, because really the Napier project is, because we've got four prospects, known prospects already on the Napier project. There's Chag and Gogbala, where we have our resource, which itself has a lot of growth. And then there's the other two prospects. It's almost like four different projects on one permit. So yes, we are funneling, you know, most of the money onto Napier, but we're keeping in mind that as a company grows, you know, you need to, you know, expand a little bit. So we're doing it commensurate with the money that we have.
So there we go, folks. Interesting story there. West African gold explorer, Mako Gold. And as I mentioned at the start, if you call up who's the best performed gold stocks in recent times on the ASX, you'll find names like Perseus and West African Gold, Tieto. So seems to be the place to be to find and quickly add ounces. And that's what Mako intends doing. I'm going to quote Peter here. He said 1.5 million ounces within a year or less. A growth story, an emerging growth story, that's for sure. So with that, Peter, thanks for your time today and for the rundown on the company. Much appreciated and best of luck with it all.
Yeah, thank you, Barry, and appreciate the opportunity.
Cheers.